Support comes from Gemma, architects, planners, and designers seeking to bring joy to their clients and communities. Details at gemastl.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. The May 16th tornado that tore through St. Louis caused at least $1 billion in property damage, according to initial estimates by the city assessor's office. More than 10,000 buildings in the tornado's path sustained damage. In the days that followed, affected city residents began seeing stickers affixed to their front doors. The stickers came in three colors: green, yellow, and red, each signifying the amount of damage to the structure. Red stickers cautioned, "Danger, entry prohibited, violators subject to prosecution." Who gave authorization to put the stickers up? What do the colors mean? Community volunteer Deontay Watson Gray says many residents are still looking for answers.
Now, these people don't know if they're going to be forced to move out, if their property value is going to change and their whole living situation. Now I got to relocate. So it's just, they just want effort and help.
To shed some light on how post-tornado building safety assessments were made and what, in practice, those assessments mean for people displaced from their homes, we have Ed Ware, Building Commissioner for the City of St. Louis. Welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you.
And also with us is Tim Jeffries, Building Inspection Manager for the City of St. Louis. He's also a coordinator for the SAVE Coalition, which is a volunteer group of engineers, architects, and building officials trained to quickly evaluate the structural condition of buildings affected by a disaster. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Tim, you were on the ground right after the tornado. What is it that you saw, and what was your initial reaction?
Well, I did go out on Saturday morning after the tornado with Commissioner Ware, and pretty much right off the bat, there was a command center at Del Mar and Kings Highway. When we left out of the command center, it was pretty centrally located to what, you know, happened. We went down a street called Enright, and that was one of the main hits, I think, where it really dropped pretty hard. And I don't know, I guess I would say devastation, exactly what you think an EF3 would look like. That's what it looked like. There was trees everywhere, power lines snapped, houses cut in half on that particular block, you know. So it was not good. It was a bad situation. I think me and Ed came to a pretty quick thought process of this is kind of beyond just our department's, you know, abilities to assess all these buildings. That's where SAVE comes into play.
Yeah. And so seeing all of that, I mean, you have your positions. You are also citizens of St. Louis. Ed, what was the messaging that you gave to frontline assessors about the work that they were about to do?
Well, as Tim said, we were out there on Saturday, the day after the event on Friday. And as we went through the area and we saw the devastation, we immediately reached out to the SAFE Coalition, which works out of the SEMA, out of the state. We got them organized, and they were in town here, I think, by the 19th. We told them of the devastation that they were going to be confronted with. We tried to organize the correct number of teams here. Every team is a two-person team on the assessment. We knew we had a huge task ahead of us. So SAVE essentially sent the largest deployment ever to the city of St. Louis. And they've been extremely helpful up to this point. So the city's never went through anything like this. The last tornado went through the area was in 1959. So we're all trying to evaluate this and kind of think outside the box as we go through all of this rebuilding and all this recovery.
Tim, can you tell us a little bit about SAVE? What is it? We did a very brief description in the introduction, but why does it exist? And what is it that you all were doing?
Well, okay, well, SAVE is a structural and visual evaluation. They are a group of architects, engineers, volunteers that all of the building inspectors in the city, we become SAVE certified. So what they do is they give a class, and it's every 3 years you have to re-up your certification. It's not necessarily a building inspection per se, but it's a rapid assessment because you're looking at damage. You have to work quick, and normally within a building inspection, you have a time limit. You know, I mean, not no time limit. This has to be done quickly with a lot of buildings compiled into one group, you know, or list or whatever. So basically, we work with them. They kind of guide it, and we kind of piggyback off of them, but we also know what we're doing because we're all in the same boat together when we're out there looking at these buildings. So.
And how many assessors does the city have on hand for this kind of work, and how many volunteers came through the SAVE Coalition?
I believe, if my numbers were correct, about 80 volunteer inspectors and engineers came through to team up with the building division to go through the area. As Tim said, this is a rapid evaluation. This is not going inside or outside of buildings. It's outside only. I'm sorry, not inside.
Mm-hmm.
So they were very helpful. They're a very well organized group, and they interacted with us very efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
So
this is a great deal of work. I mean, the thousands and thousands of homes, you know, buildings to evaluate. I'm glad for the clarification note about people not going inside. Now, as far as the going inside part goes, these questions about the stickers and the three different colors that they represent, what did they mean? So a yellow sticker, what got a yellow sticker? What is it that got a green sticker? Can you provide, Tim, a specific example for those?
Normally, to keep it simple, the more damage, the severe damage, would be an unsafe structure that would get a red placard. If you had some damage, but it was limited and you could have limited access to the building, it would be yellow. And if there was minor or no damage at all from the tornado itself, it would get a green placard.
Mm-hmm. And this is also from the exterior.
Mm-hmm.
So what kinds of damage, I mean, we're talking about looking at what was happening with the roofs or the walls, I mean, the doors themselves or windows?
Yeah, so I'll answer part of that. So when Tim and I went out on the first assessment of everything, we saw a lot of structural damage. We saw partially collapsed buildings. We saw leaning buildings. We saw what we thought was chimneys ready to fall. So you're going to find different things like that. Down power lines were everywhere at that time. So things like that would move towards a severe structural damage type sticker. As Tim said, the yellow sticker is more of a moderate. It might be minor, moderate damage to it. And green would be little or no structural hazards at all. And I will say in the very beginning, some of the stickers we used were past old stickers that we already had printed up through a earthquake practice drill from years ago. We felt the need to get out there right away, and we used those old stickers just to start the evaluation process. As we went on, these stickers were reevaluated and modified to fit the needs of a tornado, because the original stickers talked about aftershock and everything else like that. We were geared towards a earthquake at that time with the original one. So it did cause some confusion, but we've moved quickly to correct all of that.
Mm-hmm. Now, there seemed to be a contradiction between the language on the sticker and the language that describes the sticker online, and that included text on the red sticker specifically that said entry prohibited, violators subject to prosecution. Now, on the website, the city says that it will not penalize or charge individuals for entry. Can you clarify a little bit
Absolutely.
About that?
That's the original stickers that I had spoke of that we went out there, and it was quickly modified. And the city is not enacting any legal condemnations or orders for people to leave at all.
Yeah.
That's not happening at all.
Tim, when those stickers were being put up, were you having any interactions with residents who, you know, were confused? What were some of the things that they asked? Or, you know?
Yeah, there was all kinds of information. As Ed said, there were a lot of people with the original ones, they were thinking it was an eviction or a condemnation, and it's neither. We're not evicting you from your home. You were victimized once. We don't want to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, it's what you're doing is you're telling them it's an unsafe structure. If you're going to be in there, it's not safe to really be in there. But we don't have the power to tell them to not in an event like that. And so there was, most people just took it for what it was, and they didn't know who we were at first until we explained we're the SAVE organization. Some of us had our building inspection shirts on, and so the city and the state working together trying to placard the buildings, because without the placards, they don't know how much damage or how bad the damage would be. And that's where, you know, maybe FEMA kicks in with money and everything. And it's one whole process of things. And it had to start somewhere.
Right.
It was with the placards.
So last week, we had a conversation about bricks. And we had an architectural and cultural historian, Michael Allen, who's part of that conversation. And he had shared that he felt that the green, yellow, and red safety assessment tags didn't include enough information on them.
It's just seems like very likely to create a lot of panic and fear and provide no useful information to people. If okay, you have the red sticker, but you can still go in the building. Until when? Until what?
No, and you have explained that the stickers that were used initially were not made for the kind of
tornado
event.
The original ones we had in place, and we ran with immediately to try to respond to the citizens out there to alert them to the type of damage that came through, and so they would be careful. That was for, like I said, for an earthquake.
Yeah,
and you have to understand this was a rapid evaluation of these structures to kind of throw out information to the people of any dangers that may be involved in this particular targeted structure. So that's what this was.
Yeah.
This was not detailed. This was rapid.
Mm-hmm. And since then, have there been formal notices that have been sent to homeowners or landlords with more information than these stickers provide?
No.
No.
No. No. No formal informational things. People are, we're advising them to call 622-4800, the Citizen Service Bureau, to, you know, if they want somebody to go out there and reevaluate the stickers, and you know, we're trying to work through all of this. We're trying to be flexible. We're trying to help people. You know, this is something nobody's ever went through before. So,
And you've been doing this work for quite some time, eh?
I have.
Yeah.
Yes.
And again, that number is 622-4800.
Yes.
4800.
Yes.
Are there plans for subsequent assessments by the city's building division, and you know, what is the timeline for that?
Well, we're still going through an evaluation process right now. I mean, it's still ongoing.
Now, have there been trainings or rehearsals for these types of natural disasters, Tim, in what you've done with SAVE?
Yes, there has been over last summer, about a little more than a year ago, maybe a little less than a year ago, they had a training event down at the Busch Stadium, and they brought the fire department to save people were there.
Oh, yes.
And a lot of outsiders. Mm-hmm. And they do a simulated, I believe that was an earthquake event.
That's
simulated,
right. Yes.
You know, so
yes.
They do this from time to time throughout the state, different locations, and sometimes we go to them. Sometimes if they're here in our town, obviously we're going to be there and get involved in that.
Yeah. So understanding that this is something of a dynamic situation, we're getting more and more information as time goes on, and we're in the middle of week 3 since the tornado happened. The estimated number of buildings affected has recently increased from about 5,000 to 10,000. And what is your sense of how many houses are remaining to be evaluated?
I have no true sense of that right now. We're still going through the evaluation process. We're still pushing outward from what was the original tornado path that we determined. And so we're going through a constant review every day.
Yeah.
So
how is it that you decide, you know, where to start, you know, where to evaluate?
You mean where I'm not sure
where the inspectors are going. How do you strategize that?
Oh, absolutely. We'll get a rough idea on a path, and that's put on a map, and then we will send people to targeted areas for assessment. You know, no, it's not willy-nilly.
Oh, sure. Well, What resources are there available to residents who have building assessment tags on their homes now?
Well, the administration's exploring a lot of different options right now and to do what they can to assist these people. So I know things are very fluid right now, but they are exploring a lot of things in that area.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, Tim?
I do believe there is another hotline number. 911's for emergencies, and they did give us a 211 number. But I've heard there's some sticking points with it because it got overwhelmed for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe that the mayor's office could be working with, like, Urban League. I've gotten some calls from people in Urban League, but mm-hmm. I don't know exactly how they operate, what they do. But I know there's a lot of outside other than us kicking in to help everybody.
Right, right. And what is it that the mayor is exploring? Do you have some sense of that? Or is there something that you would like to see the mayor's office focus on?
Well, those are done by people who are experts in their field, as far as exploring outside resources and things like that. I try to stay focused on my expertise,
right?
Which is the damage assessment,
yeah,
and the going through the repairs as we eventually go down this path.
Mm-hmm.
So,
damage repair front, is there something that you would like to see?
Well, we've already made some key adjustments inside my department. We have waived all of the fees involved with permits. We have the ability to do that by ordinance, and we did that. And my plan examiners are actively reaching out to other volunteer architects to see if they can donate some of their time on drawing. So
mm-hmm.
we're staying with inside the building division and dealing with all the repairs and the damage. We're exploring different things internally.
Mm-hmm.
As a large picture, the big picture, I would not be able to expertly even talk about that.
So. Sure. As far as repairs, Tim, is there somewhere that residents should be going for that kind of assistance? You know, should they coordinate now on their own? You know, you mentioned the 211 number. What can you offer there?
Well, I mean, it would be a normal permit process. You hire an architect to draw up what you need, and that's still going to be in play. Like Ed said, the permit fees will be waived. I do believe we're going to have somebody, and Ed can probably speak of this more,
mm-hmm.
sort of a mobile plan review operation in the field. And so minor things right now, getting roofs from leaking, tarps, TPO roofing, if they can keep the water out. We're just allowing that. Some mm-hmm. repairs you have to do because a lot of people, the calls that I'm getting, is a lot of people want reassessment from red to yellow or whatever
uh-huh.
to get their electric turned back on. And so we have to keep the water out because you don't want to energize a home and then it rain like it is today.
Right, right.
And that's not a good situation. But you know, we have a business assistance center in City Hall, and there's a few other resources we do have. I don't have any of the numbers, you know, on me right
sure.
now, but there's things out there that they can reach out. And, mm-hmm. and the city's website does have an actual page dedicated to tornado relief.
Yes.
So they
yes.
can go to the City of St. Louis website
mm-hmm.
also.
And as we close here, I mean, I think talking about rebuilding has come up a lot. And I know that you, both of you, have been in conversation with people not only locally but outside the area. How long do you think it will take to get to a point of stabilization with these buildings, even before we can talk about rebuilding?
Well, it's a complicated question to answer only because right now it's not just so much the want and the desire of these people to repair and rebuild, but there's also supply chain issues with materials somewhat, and the contractors themselves, a lot of them aren't available. They're already tied up on other projects. So it's a complex thing that's occurring out there. You know, my fingers are crossed that we can get this done as quickly as possible, but the reality, it involves so many different scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Ed Ware is building commissioner for the City of St. Louis, and Tim Jeffries is building inspection manager for the City of St. Louis and coordinator for the SAVE Coalition. Tim and Ed, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for letting us talk about this.
We need to take a quick break. Coming up, the needs and challenges of St. Louis residents displaced by the May 16th tornado. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
This is St. Louis Public Radio. Support comes from Para Corporation, a general contractor seeking professionals who want to make a difference in the community. More at parac.com/careers.
Welcome back. I'm Elaine Cha. St. Louisans whose homes were hit by the tornado nearly 3 weeks ago continue to face serious challenges around housing. Charles Buchanan is a legal empowerment and hotline organizer with Tenants Transforming Greater St. Louis. They join us now to talk about resident needs in the moment and what comes next. Charles, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Now, Charles, what is your reaction to, you know, what we just heard, some of the points that were brought up about the city's building division?
Yeah, thank you for asking that question. Some of my immediate reactions is that I didn't feel that I heard a lot of answers from the building department. You were asked about what's the timeline, and they were unable to really provide a timeline even after you asked around, you know, has SAVE done trainings like this before? And they said, yeah, like last year we were out at Busch Stadium, you know, training for these type of natural disasters. But it seemed when a natural disaster came that training failed, and that was really disappointing to hear that answer. And then one of my top tier reaction is that there is a extreme need for clear information around the stickers, that they're even still confused, and they're mm-hmm. really, you know, taking a shortcut by just staying in their role and not really putting more pressure on administration that they're working under to get answers.
Mm-hmm. And you are experiencing this from a very particular standpoint because of the work that you do. What is it that you have been hearing, Charles, about the most immediately pressing needs that tenants who are renters are facing?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so I'm getting to speak to renters across the north side and west side of St. Louis, and some of those immediate needs is housing. You know, the stickers are causing huge confusion for them in regards to yellow, orange stickers and red stickers, and if, you know, they can actually break their lease. And if they are able to break their lease, where do they go? You know, mm-hmm. are they going to be able to stay in that immediate neighborhood where they're from, where they work, where their children go to school, or are they going to be completely displaced out of the north side, out of the west side, in these temporary housing mm-hmm. shelters that are open. And even those shelters are really at capacity.
Yeah. What have they been doing? I mean, how have people been, how have they been finding a place to stay? In past conversations we've had on the show, we are hearing that people are, they're choosing to stay right by where they have lived instead of going somewhere further away. Is that also what you were hearing? And what kinds of struggles are people facing?
Yeah, people are staying in their homes where there's damage, where there's structural issues, because they don't have any choice, or they're doubling up, which means that they're living with a family member or living with a friend in that immediate neighborhood. But the biggest, you know, concern, you know, with doubling up is that sometimes that triggers a separate eviction for the people that they're living with, because it can cause a lease violation because you have a new family living with you that's not on your lease.
Mm-hmm.
And then these families that are choosing to stay, you know, they're really they're not able to move because I spoke to one young lady who's a student. Her leasing company gave her the option to move because there was structural damage, but she had to make the hard decision or to accept a rent increase. So she was paying around $700, and they said, okay, yeah, we can move you to a new building that isn't hasn't experienced any damage from the tornado, but it is an increase. And they didn't give her option to keep that, you know, that that rent the same.
Mm-hmm. What are landlords whose properties have been damaged legally obligated to do? I mean, we talked about the stickers. If there is clearly damage that needs to be taken care of, then what do they need to provide for their renting tenants?
Yeah, so if there is major structural damage, landlords legally need to allow their tenants to break the lease, return their security deposits within that 30 days. And I would argue, because it's an emergency, they need to give it to them more than 30 days earlier. And also, if there is partial damage, it's livable, then landlords need to legally reduce the rent, not forcing tenants to pay that full rent amount.
Yeah. To the point about, people needing to get out, you know, there have been many posts on social media of letters that are telling renters, you have 10 days to move. Are you getting a lot of calls about that?
Yeah, I have gotten a few calls where they're getting that 10 days to vacate notice from their landlord or their leasing company. And it's not really legal, right? Mm-hmm. Because they have this lease agreement where they're supposed to keep this structure livable, habitable. So if there is repairs that need to be made, they need to make those repairs with the tenant housed.
Mm-hmm. Before we get any further, Charles, can you give us some basics about Tenant Transforming Greater St. Louis, what and whom it was founded for?
Yeah, so we were originally called Homes for All St. Louis, and we rebranded over last year. And we were started in 2018. We are Black-led, renter-led, and we have all been impacted in some way by poor housing condition. And we are designed to help the most marginalized of renters in St. Louis City. And we really prioritize changing the landscape for tenants around conditions and accountability for landlords.
Mm-hmm. You're coming into this work, it is related to personal experience. How much is it that landlords get away with because renters do not know what their rights are?
I mean, that's the biggest problem, right? Is we are only as strong as our knowledge. And because there are very few organizations that are forward-facing when it comes to advocacy and doing education, tenants fall through the cracks because they don't know. Mm-hmm. And that's what upholds the dominant structures of landlords and allowing them to really exploit marginalized people. And what we see in this work is that shifts when tenants have the correct information around the law and they know what their protections are. They're able to really use that to know their rights, to shape their story, and then eventually change policy by being activated in community.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that trainings are a big part of what your organization does. Are those trainings primarily for the staff of Tenants Transforming Greater St. Louis, or are they for renters themselves?
So they are for renters themselves. So we lean workshops throughout the city doing what we call Tenant Landlord 101 trainings that train residents and renters around what their rights and how to draft things as simple as like a demand letter. We teach them how to start a tenant union, and we have a program called Housing Navigators where we teach people to act like organizers and paralegals within their neighborhood and, you know, train others to do this type of work.
Mm-hmm. Given that we're talking about a natural disaster on the scale that we've not seen. I mean, the earlier guest, Ed Ware, who's with the City Building Commission, said that it's been since 1959. Have you all had to adjust your training to respond to what is happening now, or I mean, is it pretty much just the same training that you have been offering?
It's pretty much the same, because unfortunately, the law remained the same, and it's one of the Missouri revised statutes. I think it's like 444, but it says an act of God, which is an act of nature. Mm-hmm. And that's just a law that we teach tenants to utilize. So we're leaning on that part of our training to educate them, saying, you know, if this tornado damaged your apartment, the law says that you do not need to be in that lease, that that lease is expired and you are legally allowed to end it.
Mm-hmm. Is that law sufficient?
It's not.
And how can it be improved?
That's a great, great question. We need to get really clear and micro about the conditions that tenants experience. So in that law, they can expand on it by saying, okay, that security deposit that's typically says 30 days, that's when you get it. How about you get that within 7 days, mm-hmm. right? So I think that's a one opportunity to really expand on that particular statute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think you have answered a bit of this question, but I want to ask it more directly. You know, the now problem, this housing crisis that stems from tornado damage, I mean, to what extent is it really a new problem? I mean, what is it important to understand about the landscape of affordable rental housing pre-tornado?
Yeah, so we did a report called Home as Health with the Building Department, actually, and St. Louis City Health Department in WashU, and we actually went through all of the code enforcement for St. Louis City, and we found tons of homes across the west side and north side that had code violations from disinvestment from not only corporate landlords, but smaller homeowners who, because they were low income, were not able to really invest in their property. And so when we went out on the 16th after the tornado that evening and even over the weekend, we seen those were the homes that fail.
Mm-hmm.
And that really speaks about we need to invest deeply into the north side, whether that's releasing more ARPA funds for recovery or the RAM settlement. But I think that we have a duty to stabilize a community that has historically been disinvested because of structural racism.
Mm-hmm. You talked about policy. You talked about laws. Those are very slow to change. What is it that can be done now? You know, what is some of the advice that you have for people who are listening, who want to somehow contribute to, to getting things further along in recovery, or for those who are facing some of the situations that you've described?
Yeah, I think the most immediate thing that's within all of our control is our ability to collectively organize. And that's as simple as, like, if you were able to negotiate with your own landlord to get out of your lease or to be relocated after damage from the tornado, go and share that story with your neighbor and your cousin and your family member so that they feel empowered to try that for themselves. As well as, we can really apply more pressure on our current administration around what they post online. So that means them getting really clear when they're pulling those stickers and they're putting in, they're saying on the sticker, hey, actually it's red, but you don't have to leave. Mm-hmm. Your building isn't condemned and you get to stay, being very clear on that language.
Yeah.
You know, I heard them say earlier that the stickers originally used were for an earthquake. We should already have had prepared stickers, right, that spoke to any type of national disaster that's for this area, because we have a history of tornadoes. We have a history of these different disasters. So I think that right now we can create better literature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In our last minute, what do you think, what is the biggest unanswered question that you wish you had the answer for, so that when you speak with people who are calling the hotline, you have something to offer?
I think my biggest unanswered question is, where does the people go? You know, like, are they going to really be able to call St. Louis home still if they're displaced mm-hmm. after this?
Charles Buchanan is a legal empowerment and hotline organizer with Tenants Transforming Greater St. Louis. Charles, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
This segment was produced by Emily Woodbury and Darius Varner.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.